Picture a smoky tent in rural Georgia, 1923. Ma Rainey steps onto the stage wearing a headpiece with a thousand feathers, her neck heavy with gold and pearls. The crowd roars, not just because she's about to sing, but because she represents something revolutionary. A Black woman who travels where she wants, says what she thinks, and gets paid handsomely for it. When she opens her mouth to sing Prove It On Me Blues, declaring, "They must have been women, 'cause I don't like no men," she's doing more than performing. She's creating a blueprint for resistance that will echo through generations, from Billie Holiday's haunting protest songs to Beyoncé's Formation. When Mamie Smith recorded Crazy Blues in 1920, it sold 75,000 copies in the first month at $1 each, a fortune for mostly poor Black purchasers. Recording companies suddenly realized they'd been ignoring a massive market. Between 1923 and 1926, hundreds of women recorded blues songs, creating the foundation of American popular music. This wasn't just commercial success, it was cultural revolution. These women articulated experiences of freedom that powerfully demonstrated slavery's end. While European American popular songs idealized romantic love within domestic spheres, blues represented sexuality as freely chosen love. What's striking is what's missing: marriage and motherhood. In 252 songs recorded by Bessie Smith and Ma Rainey, only four reference marriage. These women sang about work, travel, and love freely chosen, refusing to apologize. When Smith sang, "I got the world in a jug, the stoppers in my hand," she was declaring independence in a world that told Black women they had no right to it. Most love songs respond to rejection with tears and resignation. Blues women chose defiance instead. Smith's downhearted blues doesn't end with crying. It ends with a declaration: "I'm gonna hold it until you men come under my command." This wasn't just music, it was rehearsal for revolution. These songs avoided sentimentality, embracing unadorned realism that acknowledged both desire and its complications. They bore witness to contradictory demands placed on Black women, who faced ideological expectations of domesticity, while their lived post-slavery experiences rendered such assumptions absurd. How could you romanticize marriage when economic independence was your only protection? The boldness extended beyond lyrics. When Ku Klux Klan members tried to disrupt Bessie Smith's tent performance, she confronted them directly, shouting obscenities until they retreated, then returned to her performance as if she had just settled a routine matter. This fearlessness created what one scholar called a new, different model of Black women: more assertive, sexy, sexually aware, independent, realistic, complex, alive. Ma Rainey's Prove It On Me Blues flaunted her lesbianism decades before Stonewall. "Wear my clothes just like a fan, talk to the gals just like any old man." These women refused confinement by anyone's expectations. Blues performances functioned as proto-consciousness-raising sessions. When Smith sang Pinchback Blues, warning against sweet men who don't work, she offered practical advice: "Get a working man when you marry, and let all these sweet men be." This carried class consciousness, urging identification with working class values over parasitic charm. These songs created an imagined community of supportive women. Rainey and Smith addressed girls rather than folks, explicitly seeking women's solidarity. Songs like "I Used to Be Your Sweet Mama" became rehearsals for assertiveness. "I ain't gonna let no man worry me sick or turn this hair of mine gray." This working-class blues community defended dignity differently than middle-class Black club women, who often distanced themselves from blues culture. Blues women demonstrated that working-class women could defend their dignity against both white racism and male dominance without apologizing for who they were. Travel imagery in women's blues represented psychological and physical freedom. After slavery, freed men wandered with guitars as symbols of ultimate freedom, while women remained confined by domestic duties, creating a gendered pattern where male mobility was normative. May Rainey challenged this through extensive touring with groups like the Rabbitfoot Minstrels, showing female audiences possibilities of equaling men's freedom. Her songs featured women who became travelers themselves rather than remaining passive when men departed. Performing traveling blues with a suitcase on stage, she deliberately evoked wanderlust. You could just see them jigs wanting to go someplace else. For women, travel implied autonomy over their circumstances, particularly their sexual lives. Railroad tracks represented concrete evidence of different possibilities elsewhere. These performances refuted the blues cliché that when a man gets the blues, he hops a train and rides. When a woman gets the blues, she lays down and cries. Blues women were hopping trains too, literally and metaphorically, claiming mobility as their birthright. In House Rent Blues, Smith weaves impending homelessness with sexual politics. The protagonist, facing eviction on a cold, dark, and stormy night, pleads with a potential lover to put your woman outdoors to provide shelter. This interplay shows how blues relationships function both literally and as metaphors for social aspirations. Ma Rainey's Hustling Blues portrays a prostitute seeking escape from her pimp through the legal system. The black woman stands between a white male judge and her black male abuser, a tragic positioning that invites audiences to critique how racism compounds gender exploitation. Bessie Smith's Backwater Blues emerged from witnessing Southern black communities devastated by the catastrophic 1927 Mississippi River floods that displaced over 600,000 people. Black communities were deliberately sacrificed to protect white areas, with victims subjected to forced labor and violence. The song's popularity demonstrates how blues transformed individual tragedies into collective cultural consciousness, preserving historical memory while creating metaphors of oppression that forged community through shared understanding. When Billie Holiday performed Strange Fruit at Cafe Society in 1939, she transformed from entertainer to revolutionary. The lynching protest song, with its haunting imagery of black bodies swinging in the southern breeze, threatened her career. At 24 and craving commercial success, she chose political truth over safety. Holiday's genius lay in transforming inconsequential Tin Pan Alley love songs into complex emotional explorations. Like enslaved Africans who transformed English to meet their cultural needs, Holiday reworked commercial material, incorporating her battle against cultural oppression into every phrase. She exposed ideological content while hinting at historical disappointments. Unlike Rainey and Smith, who concentrated on black cultural creations, Holiday boldly entered white popular culture's domain, revealing how love and sexuality were overdetermined by male dominance ideologies. She bridged past and present, connecting Bessie Smith's classic blues to contemporary artists using music as personal expression and political intervention. When you hear Tracy Chapman's socio-political songs, Erykah Badu's phrasing, Beyoncé's Formation, or Lizzo's body-positive anthems, you're hearing echoes of these pioneers. These women created spaces where black feminist consciousness could flourish, where working-class women defended their dignity, where sexuality was claimed without apology. Their legacy reminds us that sometimes the most revolutionary act is telling the truth about your life loud enough that others recognize themselves in it.